Welcome everyone to the Prepared Mindset Podcast, and welcome to the official first episode of 2026. And with that, the first Sunday sit rep iteration of the new year. I'm your host, Austin. Thank you guys for joining me, and we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. If this is your first time checking out the podcast, welcome. Happy to have you guys aboard, and if you're returning, thank you. Happy to have you aboard as well as we dive in here this week, or this month, really. The sit rep, we drop these monthly to talk about current events, things going on in the world, stuff that's relevant, you know, to those of us that are prepared citizens here in the United States. And I guess, you know, it's not limited to that, but I mean, I think the majority of our audience is probably Americans, so that's cool. If you guys are listening abroad, feel free to drop a comment, man. Always happy to hear from folks in other countries that are listening and checking out the content here from Prepared Mindset. But there's stuff going on, you know. I mean, the world keeps turning, right? It doesn't slow down, it doesn't stop just because we as Americans are celebrating Christmas, right? The birth of Christ our Savior, or the new year, right? Which, you know, cool. Hey, the calendar turns over. Now we get this great opportunity, right? We can all sit down and we can all talk about our feelings and our new year's resolution, right? New year, new me. I'm going to do away with, you know, nasty habits from the year before. And while I'm down with that, like, I think that you totally should kick the nasty habits and improve the way you live your life, whatever that means to you. I don't really love that we wait till the new year to do it, because it's like, here, hey, if you want to get healthier, if you want to get more fit, right, which is a good goal, we should always pursue that, and then it ruins the gym for everybody else for like the first 2-3 weeks of the year, right? Because I think the number on that is like 19 days. I think it takes 19 days on average. There's some study to this. I'm not just pulling this out my butt. I kind of am, but studies have been done regardless. It takes people approximately 19 days to give up on their New Year's resolution. They usually talk about it on like the radio and talk shows and stuff like that. And it's there's a name for it. I don't freaking know what it is. Where people just basically give up and they revert back to their classic and comfortable lifestyle choices. So as sad as that is, I mean, I think that's kind of just the reality of the world that we live in, where, you know, people want that immediate gratification, they want those immediate results. And when it becomes inconvenient or difficult, or, you know, I don't know what else you want to say, people stop. So we'll see how 2026 goes with all the things going on in the world. Maybe that'll change the curve this year. Maybe this will be the year, man. We could do it this year, you guys. But enough of that, right? We got a lot of stuff to cover. I try not to go too far and too long with these sit rep discussions. So with that, I want to make sure that we talk about our presenting sponsors here, because we are a sponsored podcast, which is a really, really cool thing to be able to say. We have some wonderful industry partners that I look forward to connecting with in a couple weeks at SHOT Show out in Las Vegas. This will be my first time attending. This will be Prepared Mindset's first time attending SHOT Show out in Vegas. If you guys are going to be there, shoot me a message, man. Let's put something on the books. I would love to connect with, you know, listeners, with friends. I know there's already a couple handfuls of people that I plan to meet with and see, talk, catch up with, maybe just, you know, have a friendly conversation, urinal to urinal, whatever we can fit in, because while I'm going to be out there 3 days, I've been told that your time is just not your own while you're out there, and it gets away from you rather easily. But nonetheless, I am very excited, and I want to take a moment here to say thank you to our presenting sponsors of the podcast that have made all of these episodes and discussions possible, that continue to make them possible, and without their support, we just couldn't do what we do. So that starts with a big thank you to Custom Night Vision, you guys, located down in Houston, Texas. The website is CustomNightVision.com. And if you guys are rolling into the new year and you are looking into getting some night vision, you want the superpower that you can actually buy, the game changer, the capability edition that's going to set you apart from, I mean, a lot of people, as common as night vision is, it's still not the most common. You can head on over to CustomNightVision.com. That's the website. Check out all of the devices they have available and ready to go in stock today. So whether you're looking for your very first single tube device, something from Nocturne Industries like the Tonto, a lot of people like it, super lightweight. You can bridge it up with a second one in a couple years and you save up some more scratch and you can build a pair of binos. Or you want to get into a PVS-14, or I think it's the Talon from Nocturne Industries. That's the new one that people are raving about being the new hotness and whatnot. You can head over to the website, check all of those options out. They have tubes in green phosphor and white phosphor from companies like Elbit and L3, NNVT, Photonis. You guys, everything you could possibly need and more. And if you're looking to get into binocular housing, right, you want to buy once, cry once, you got all your Christmas monies saved up from grandma and your great aunt Lucy, you can go to the website and on the homepage, they have a binocular builder. Right, you can go and you can pick the optics you want, which, to be clear, optics are the glass, not the tubes. You can pick the optics you want. You can pick the housing you want, like the RNVG or the ARNVG or the MH1. And those are great, great choices. And there's even more that Custom has available for you all to choose from. And if you guys have no idea what any of that stuff means, that's okay. Custom's goal here is to make this the most informative and transparent purchasing experience that they possibly can for you. So when you hit up the website, again, it's customnightvision.com, there's a little chat icon. You can find it down in the bottom right corner of the screen. You can open that up. You can reach out and send a message to the team at Custom. It's going to be Ben, it's going to be Trevor or Kevin, and they're going to connect with you. They're going to answer your questions, or you guys can reach out on the shop phone. Hey, what housing for this, 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 and this purpose? What housing is going to be my best choice, or whatever may have you. Head on over to Custom's website. Again, it's customnightvision.com. Let them know that Austin from Prepared Mindset set you guys over, and they're going to take really, really good care of you. So big thank you to them. And certainly also want to take just a moment here and say thank you to the team over at Harrington Arms for their support of the podcast. You guys, HarringtonArms.com is the website. They're located to the south of me down in Ohio, and they make some tremendous products. A lot of you guys probably are already aware of Harrington because of their reputation for quality compensators, whether that's for Glock handguns, Smith & Wesson, Canik, Springfield, the PSA Dagger. I think Ruger maybe. I'm probably missing a few in there, but they make some awesome compensators, and they make a lot of other stuff too. So whether you're looking for magwells, mag extensions, accessories to enhance your pistol shooting experience, again, head on over to HarringtonArms.com and check out everything they have available, including, but not limited to, their new Hacker system, which should be shipping out in Q1 of this year. That's their proprietary barrel and compensator combo with a unique quick disconnect functionality that I think is going to intrigue and excite a lot of folks. So big thanks to Harrington Arms. Again, the website, Harrington with an E, HarringtonArms.com. All right, folks. So with that, we can launch into the sit rep. We can start talking about what's going on in the world today, in the country. And I don't even know really where to start. I guess I'll start with the stuff that is most immediately awesome and impactful for you and I. Prepared citizens, prepared civilians, maybe you're LE in military, I don't know. But you live here in the United States, the continental United States. You enjoy our rights, our laws, our freedoms. Maybe not our laws. You don't enjoy those. Most of us don't. But we do abide by them because, you know, going to jail sucks, as I'm told. But starting on the first of the year, right? So January 1st, 2026, the Trump administration, bill, right? Or I don't even know what the hell it is. Essentially, the really, really great and wonderful love to hate $200 tax stamp cost goes away, right? So the tax stamp itself, you still have to get that. You still have to go through the process of going through the ATF, getting your form for, usually it's a suppressor or, you know, if it's an SBR, that's a different form and stuff like that, right? If you're building a NFA item, I think that's a form one. It's hard to keep track of all this stuff, right? But that $200 tax stamp that in the past you've had to pay to make a short barrel shotgun, a short barrel rifle, to build a suppressor, to purchase a suppressor, any of those things, right? That cost is now gone. And that's a really, really big deal for a lot of reasons, you guys. One of the things that I've talked about before on the podcast and why here's the thing about the NFA. A lot of people, not that probably listen to this podcast, but a lot of people seem to think that it's a good idea. It's a necessary gatekeeper to keep dangerous tools and deadly weapons out of the hands of people who would seek to do evil with them. And as with all things on paper, that seems like a great idea, just like communism, right? But in practical application, it really doesn't work out because people will just buy the longer gun. They'll just, you know, forego the suppressor. They'll just illegally modify the firearm, right? Like evil people, criminals, right, as they're commonly referred to, they don't really like, in my knowledge and my experience, they only really like to adhere to laws. That's kind of what makes them a criminal, right? So it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy that, you know, our lawmakers and our politicians don't seem to understand that. But, you know, hey, that's the world we live in, right? And what was shitty about this is that it made in a lot of instances, procuring tools like shorter rifles. So, you know, not just because they're easier to get through doorways. Everyone immediately goes to CQB when we talk about SBRs and stuff. They're shorter, therefore lighter. So if you're a smaller framed individual or a single mother, you know, with things being as they are, that does happen. Or potentially, you know, a housewife whose husband is away working all the time. I know the bills have to be paid, you guys. And as much as we as husbands want to be home as much as possible with our families, you do what you have to do to put the food on the table, to keep the roof over the heads, to keep the furnace running, especially, you know, here in Michigan. I'm pretty sure when I looked at it when I got up this morning, it was like 17 degrees outside, it's not awesome, you know. But I digress. You do what you have to do. So you want something at home that's going to be able to protect your loved ones, your family, right? So maybe an SBR makes sense. And yeah, you can get around it with pistol braces, but are those really the most effective way? And blah, blah, blah. And we could go down that rabbit hole. What the tax stamp does is it actually makes some of these things prohibitively expensive. You know, suppressors, you can get cheaper suppressors that do okay. And it's not to make these things whisper quiet, because if you guys have ever shot a 5.56 gun before, you know, it basically just takes the edge off. It doesn't make it hearing safe, right? It takes the edge off. It's, you know, I think the proposed bill, right, that was to remove suppressors from the NFA, which didn't pass, by the way, obviously, was the Hearing Protection Act, because the overpressure can be really damaging inside of structures, right? The concussive force from discharging a rifle, you know, indoors can be very damaging, not even specifically just to the shooter, but to also anybody who's also in that structure. So small children, well, children in general, other people, other adults, even the person you're shooting, right? Because as we see with law enforcement, there's like a requirement to try and preserve life even after they've been shot. Not necessarily, I don't know legally, right, by the civilian doing the shooting, perhaps, but by law enforcement that responds, right? So that's a consideration in general is all I'm trying to say. I don't want to get into the legalese of what you may or may not be required to do in those, you know, circumstances, because that's not the point we're after here. But it is a safety device as I see it, and makes shooting a lot more, I guess, comfortable, right, and safe, and all those good things. Do I think that, you know, there's the potential that we remove some of these items from the NFA? Potentially, but it'll be an uphill battle. You know, one of the circuit judges, I think it was end of November, there's a quote on the opinion that was issued saying that the NFA is necessary, and I'm paraphrasing this, and I'm probably butchering it, you guys. The NFA is necessary to regulate weapons which would otherwise be used in war. It was something like that. I was mentioning, you know, again, this imaginary dichotomy, if you will, between normal, like acceptable civilian, you know, I'm doing air quotes right now, you guys can't see it, but normal civilian firearms like 10 round handguns and revolvers and shotguns, and then or apparently, you know, AR rifles or AK pattern rifles over an arbitrary length of, you know, 26 inches, right? Those are all normal civilian rifles for reasons which most politicians can't accurately articulate. But anything under those lengths, right? So, you know, 10 and a half, 11 and a half, 12 and a half length SBRs, things like that, right? Those are meant for war. Suppressors are meant for war. Select fire firearms are meant for war. Short shotguns are obviously just meant for war, which is hilarious because full length shotguns and, you know, trench guns and things like that were used during the first two world wars, I'm fairly certain. And those would be considered by basically any standard today to be an acceptable quote unquote civilian firearm. So it's totally, I say that just to point out that it's totally arbitrary, right? But getting back to the cost here, right? So now if you want to do any of those things, you want to have an NFA item, you no longer have to pay the $200. So that helps, you know, save on some of these things, but you're still spending quite a bit of money on a suppressor. You're if you're going through a service, like I like to go through Silencer Shop, because they will do, if you pay the fee, right, they will do the processing. And they'll review your paperwork for any kind of like errors or omissions that you know, may have accidentally had on your form and stuff. They'll review it for you so that you don't have it sent back, which can create additional lag time and wait and issues and what have you and all that stuff. So I think it's like a $25 fee or something like that. So that's always been worth it in my eyes, because I want to get through the process, and I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not somebody who does a lot of the NFA stuff. There have been, you know, and we, leading up to this, we knew this was going to be a thing, right? I was told, and I don't know if this number is accurate, there was between 600 and 700,000 applications, e-form applications, right, that were sitting in queue, that were waiting, basically since the announcement of this. People wanted, oh, I'll wait to push mine in until the first of the year, because then I don't have to pay the money. And it's like, okay, I see what you're doing here, but it creates this backlog and pileup, and it causes issues. You know, you're seeing a lot of stuff come out of this. Some of it, actually most of it, is pretty unfortunate for something that we would otherwise view as a positive. And here's where I'll start, is that on, and this was released by the NCCS or NICS or whatever, the National Shooting Sports Foundation released this, and it was in regard to the NICS, which is the background check system, I think. I'm so bad with the acronyms, so I do apologize. I know NCIS is a TV show, so, you know, not that, but I think it's NICS, is the background check system. That crashed due to volumes, and then there was something put out by the National Shooting Sports Foundation saying that on the first of the year, somewhere approximate to 150,000 applications were processed, or the process had begun, right? I'm not saying those were, you know, processed, approved, whatever, because I don't know. But to give you guys a comparison, right, usually in a single day, the number is about 2,500. Not 25,000, 2,500, which means it's a 50 times increase, from the normal to what we saw due to this backlog. And I've seen screenshots, I've seen stuff shared all over social media. Hey, oh, for 6 hours today, the ATF page was just, you know, a spinning wheel. You know, for 6 hours, this is all we were looking at. And that's what was to be expected, which is why you did see a lot of retailers. I think people saw it as like pandering or pushing for sales, whatever. I didn't see it that way, because I thought about not what was happening at the moment, but what was going to happen in the future, which was that because of this backlog, you're going to have to wait. Processing times are going to slow way down. Will it be as bad as they were when we had like written, forms and stuff like that? No, they won't be that bad, I don't think. But the e-form process is going to be substantially slower. You know, I think I've shared this. It was last October, not of 25, but of 24. I think it was the 4th or the 5th is when I did the form. I purchased a RC2, Surefire RC2. It was like 28 days. I think it was 23, because I think it was October 28th was when I picked it up. So yeah, about 23 days, less than a month for me to get my can out of jail, which is just like super freaking awesome, when I know people were waiting at some points in time a year to 14 months to 16 months to get their cans out of jail. So this is, it's a lot, man. It's a right step in the right direction for gun owners, right? It's helping us save money. Should this have just been removed altogether? Or at least like meet us in the middle, like, hey, we're going to leave explosive devices and select firearms on the NFA, but we'll meet you in the middle and we'll give you SBRs, SBSs, and suppressors off the NFA. I think a lot of people would have been happy with that. In the spirit of, you know, quote unquote, true compromise. Now, does that mean that I agree with it? Does that mean that the rest of that is still unconstitutional? No, I don't agree with it. And yes, it's all still unconstitutional because, you know, shall not be infringed, right? We could spend hours, right, talking about the finer points behind that as an overall problem with the NFA, but really just wanted to talk about how that change impacts all of us and what it means for us as potential gun owners, because I think, you know, the calendar being what it is, with expenses tied to Christmas and the holidays and just life in general, right? People are always saving and people are always looking to buy suppressors. That's not like, hey, we only buy these in like April when we get our tax return so that I can go shoot all summer long. No, like I just said it. I bought mine. The last one was in October of 24. And then, you know, the first one I bought was on Black Friday when I got my Dead Air Sandman. I purchased that on Black Friday back in like 2021 or 2022, something like that. Towards the end of the year for me personally, but I also know friends that have gotten stuff done in like February and March and April and July and whatever. So there's not just like a particular season in which this is particularly applicable. But I did want to make sure that we took the time here to talk about this because firearms are a huge part of our individual preparedness. And if you have the ability to get a suppressor, I would always recommend it to folks, even if it's a cheaper one. You know, you don't always have to go with the Surefire or the Huxworks or, you know, the newest, latest and greatest. I know there's a couple brands out there that are on the more budget oriented side of things that perform extremely well, you know, with Yankee Hill and Otter Creek Labs. And I'm not saying those are cheap suppressors or bad suppressors. They just tend to sit on the cheaper end of the spectrum when compared to some of the other options on the market. So more, I'm sure, to come on this as things develop and we see the numbers and the reporting and the data on, you know, how many of these are being processed, what our wait times are looking like. The other story I want to move to now is this has been developing in the last several days is the situation in, well, it started in Minnesota and it's a nationwide issue because it's now pulling, you know, as one example, Ohio into the discussion, but the Somali daycare fraud thing, which is really interesting and something that I definitely want to talk about because here's the reality, you guys. As American citizens, we pay a hell of a lot in taxes. It seems like lately it just keeps coming back up and coming back up and coming back up in my day-to-day discussions. Like last night, I went out to dinner with my wife and just happened to run into my brother, his fiance, and her son, and ran over to their table and stole a couple of French fries from the kid. And he looks at me all mouth hanging open, like, "What the hell just happened here? How'd you just take my fries?" And I'm texting my brother from across the restaurant, and he's like, "Oh, I was so tempted to have the taxes discussion," because he's almost nine, so like he's several years off from having to work still, right? But that's always like the really unfortunate and shitty first, and very impactful impression that people get when they work their first job is like, who's this FICA lady and why is she taking so much money off my check? And then you do taxes and you realize like, hey, you don't get every cent that you make. You did that quick calculation, $10 an hour for a 40-hour work week, easy math, right, is $400. I'm going to be making $800 every 2 weeks. And you're like, no, you're not. You're not even making close to that shit when you look at everything. And it's that like, that shock to the system, and taxation is theft. It really is. When you look at the fact that we started this country essentially based off of being upset about a 3% tax, right? 3% tax on tea. That's, our forefathers would laugh at us right now. They'd be so ashamed. We pay so much in taxes in this country. And it's why so many people have to work into old age and people don't retire at 72 like they probably should. And when they, and I have different opinions on that because I think some people think that the government, because of all the money they paid into it, should just pay for them to exist past the age of 70 with them having done very little throughout the rest of their life to plan or prepare. And I really do disagree with that. That's a deep subject. I can feel a lot of you guys getting pissed and shutting this off right now because you disagree with me. And that's fine. Like, we can certainly have that disagreement. I don't think that the government shouldn't do some things to help people. I certainly do. I think that when we talk about Social Security and Medicare and all that stuff, I think that those are great ideas that are executed in exceptionally flawed ways, and it's been decades and decades of things just getting worse and worse and worse. But getting back, getting back to the story here, there's a journalist named Nick Shirley, right, who went through and basically found on the books how many millions and millions of dollars were granted by the state of Minnesota, Governor Tim Walz, which you guys might remember him as the former running mate of Kamala Harris in the last election. I do believe that he was a big part of why they did not win, because the man's a buffoon and a liar regarding his military service. That was pretty quickly disproven. A lot of stuff he said was disproven by people very early on, including, I'm pretty sure, the Minnesota National Guard itself, but not the point here. You guys can certainly Google search a lot of that and see where the stories were not lining up there. But nevertheless, he is the governor of Minnesota. And Nick Shirley went and he pulled the public data, right? This is all publicly accessible stuff, you guys. How much money, how many millions of dollars was given to these Somali daycare centers across the state? And Nick has video, you know, documentation, video journalism, if you will, right? Going around these daycare centers, and they are all closed and locked up and you can't get in. And the one that he was able to talk to, he asked about enrolling his, albeit fictitious, son, but at least I'm pretty sure he's fictitious. I know he didn't really want to enroll him in there, but hey, can I get some information on enrolling him? Oh, no, manager's not here. Well, is there someone I can talk to about it? Nope, nobody's not here. Well, can you tell me more about this? No. And it just becomes very obvious when these parking lots for these places are full of trash and debris and there's no cars there, there's not kids here. These daycare centers aren't operating. The one that the Quality Learning Center, because the sign didn't have the letter N in the word learning, which they clipped, they like next day, as soon as this all broke on Twitter and stuff, next day they had like a really shitty like layover or sticker put over over Learing where it says learning. They fixed that immediately. And then just so funny that like 2 days later, oh, we had a break in here. They like kicked a hole in a wall and were like, oh, people came in from the outside and they stole our documentation and our pay stubs and all of our, and it's like, no, that was kicked in from the inside. You guys are liars. There's no way. Like, and I saw the photos online, like, you know, the wall's the width of a cinder block. There's no human, well, maybe a Somali, but there's not humans in this country that can fit in those walls and move in and out that way. That's just silliness. What made it worse is then CNN came back and wanted to talk to Nick Shirley and doubled down on this. They're like, oh, so you know for sure that there's no children here? Oh, well, daycare centers remain locked for the children's safety. It's like, no, there's a receptacle or a receptions desk. There's like a foyer, you know, and then a set of double doors going into where the kids would be. That's supposed to be open, because how else are parents supposed to be able to get in to get their kids? So that doesn't really make a ton of sense when you start thinking about it. But now people, this is turning into a really big deal. This is snowballing into a huge issue, because now we're starting to see, not only in Minnesota, the thousands and hundreds of, you know, dollars or the millions of dollars, excuse me, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, right, given to these daycare institutions over the last, like, it's like 10 or 15 years. It's not a recent thing, guys. It's a lot of money. You're starting to see pictures and stuff and video clips then that were starting to be shared of, you know, Somalis that were flying out of country with millions, with $1 million in cash, right? Because that's what they were given, you know, by our own governments, your tax dollars, my tax dollars, your tax dollars, right? Certainly the citizens of the great state of Minnesota that had paid into their system, right? So they give up, you know, a big slice of their paycheck to go into these government programs, and then these Somali people are leaving the country with it. And then you get doubled down by the mayor of Minnesota and, oh, Ilhan Omar, who I cannot stand that woman. She's such a despicable representative of anything in this country. It's so awful that she's still her and Rashida Tlaib here in Michigan, honestly. They are the total representation of why people don't like politicians, because they lie, they act so inappropriately. They're not, you know, here's the thing, like, if you can articulate your point on things, I can at least respect you and your position. Doesn't mean I necessarily agree with it or like it or any of those things, but I can, like, understand that, okay, you're at least an educated individual and you can sit here and have the discussion. Those women typically can't. They go straight to pandering and screaming and yelling. Rashida Tlaib has done it on video so many times. I don't understand. Well, I do understand how she continues to win elections. She she has constituents that vote her in who are immigrants. Probably not all legal either here in Michigan. And that's a whole other ball of wax. But now there's online movements starting. People are, and Marjorie Taylor Greene, which I know not everyone's a fan of her, you know, whatever. People are, you know, hey, we should stop paying taxes. And I'm not saying you should, I'm not advocating one way or the other. I'm just telling you, this is what's going on online. Okay. People are saying, nope, we should just stop paying taxes. because this is what's happening. Our money is very clearly going to, I mean, we know it's going to special interests. Our government, our federal government is sending, you know, hundreds of millions and billions of dollars over to Israel. Oh, they let Israel and Hamas blow the shit out of each other, blow up the shit out of each other, blow each other, whatever. And, you know, decimate that country. Oh, and we're just going to help them rebuild into the city of tomorrow. There's like artist renderings and shit of how they're going to make this a new beautiful city that they just destroyed. And now the U.S. is going to pay for it for reasons which nobody seems to fucking understand or know. All of our money that should be here to help reduce the cost of living, right? Groceries are barely still affordable, right? We're paying tons of money in taxes. Interest rates are higher than they are coming down. And I don't say they're higher than they've ever been, but interest rates are too high. Home prices are untenable. Now we're importing this idea of, hey, well, let's just do generational mortgages. So we'll do like a 50-year mortgage on these houses where your kids will have to pay for it after you fucking die to keep your rate and your monthly payment in an affordable price range. And it's like, where the fuck did this come from? This is the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard of. But we did it to ourselves. But I digress. So there's this giant movement online because of the massive amounts of government fraud, which are becoming just very apparent, you know? And like I said, this isn't just in Minnesota. It's happening in Columbus too. Actually, there is a Somali individual who is on the board for a daycare center, I think I saw. I'm trying to remember. You know, he's on the board for a daycare center getting this money, but he's also an elected official. And it's like, you're just starting to see how intertwined all of this is and how shitty all of it is when you see that these places are getting $1 million, $1.7 million per year from the state or more, right, in subsidization to run these daycare centers. And they're not doing anything with it. They don't have any overhead. They probably own the building outright at this point. Maybe they pay taxes. I would assume maybe not, right? I wouldn't be so bold as to assume that they would be, you know, oh, well, we're lawful. We pay taxes. You know, their overhead and staffing is not, there's nothing there, right? There's no reason for them to have to pay anyone because there's no children there. So just to give you guys an additional, excuse me, additional piece of insight on this, because it's so upsetting. On average, as an American, somewhere between 25 to 35% of your checks go to your taxes. And man, when you think about that, if I were to ask you, hey, could you, let's split the difference, 30%. If I were to say, hey, man, if I can give you an extra 30%, a 30% raise, right, on your check, what would you say? You'd be like, fuck yeah, what do I got to do? Nothing. I'm just going to stop taxing the shit out of you. Or a 20% reduction. You know, hey, instead of paying, which is still too much, but if you went from paying 30% of your check to 10% of your check, and I'm going to give you 20% back that you have in your pocket now to take care of you and your family. This is why this, and this is the thing, and people get pissed on the tax issue during elections because you get the liberal Democrats that sit there and say that we should be using our money for government funded programs for assistance for people here in the country that need it. And as a core concept, I don't think anybody really disagrees with that conceptually. What conservative Republicans and even moderate Democrats get pissed about is that this is the stuff that fucking comes out. We're paying all of this money to help people here at home, to help the less fortunate, to have these government-run programs. That's what you know, people with weird colored hair and all kinds of goofy lifestyle choices and whatever the fuck are getting upset about all of this, right? They're getting upset that we want to say less taxation because that means directly less money to the government for these special interest programs, which they hold so dear yet don't utilize. I don't understand it, but not the point, right? And then you come to find out, well, that money's not actually going to any of those programs. And you're sitting here screaming every 2 years, every election cycle, oh, do more, increase taxes more. We need more money because we still have people out there that need more abortions or need, you know, rehab clinics or detox clinics for drug addicts. Or we need to fund, you know, if you're in the Pacific Northwest, programs that give out clean needles to these drug addicts. Let's not get them off the drugs, but let's just make sure that they're using clean needles. And that's a program that gets, you know, way too much fucking money. And in my opinion, should not fucking exist at all. You know, but that's, again, we can go down a lot of rabbit holes with this, right? This is why this taxation thing is such a huge, sticky issue and subject. And it's, again, it's not that I think anybody, any, you know, moderate person would sit here and say we shouldn't have government assistance of some variety and some flavor in this country. I think everybody wants to do the right thing by their neighbor, right? By their fellow American. But this is why you see people screaming so much to cut taxes, because the money's not going where it should. And we should be, and like here in Michigan, we just had a drastic change here. We went from having like a, how did we do this? It was like a gas tax, you know, like it went from being utilized one way to another, and we're going to see, you know, potentially a 25 or 26 to 50 cent increase per gallon or something on gas. Oh, this is so we can redirect. This is so we can redirect the money to fix the roads. And it's like, well, why didn't you just change the tax on without the increase? Why did we need to have an additional increase? And they go, oh, no, you're not gonna see this at the pump. You're really not gonna feel this at the pump. Like, the fuck we aren't. We always do. We as the consumers and we as the individual citizens, private citizens in this state of Michigan, are always the one left holding the tab. It's why we have the highest insurance rates in the entire continental U.S. And then on top of that, like, we had a cannabis or marijuana tax go into effect starting this year too. So that money is supposed to go to fix the roads too. And it's like, okay, all of this because Gretchen Whitmer, our governor, campaigned on a promise of fixing the damn roads. And you know, you saw the videos and the clips and stuff at our rallies. People were screaming, oh yeah. And even people that were a little bit on the moderate side or moderately conservative side going, hey, if that's her campaign promise, like, I could get behind that. You know, like, albeit, yes, you're trusting a politician to follow through on any of their fucking promises, which does from time to time happen. You know, it does, not often, but it does, right? And in her first term, I don't think she fixed a single fucking thing. I think most of the money that went into fixing the roads was concentrated around downtown Detroit when we hosted the NFL draft here to try and make our city look not like it's so, you know, urban plight. And a little bit more like an urban delight. We put that stupid Detroit sign down the side of, Interstate 94 between Detroit and the airport or whatever. So people coming in from the airport in Romulus to Detroit to go downtown to Campus Martius and everything to see and experience the NFL draft here. They made it look like, hey, Detroit's on the up and up. Hey, Whitmer and, you know, and Mike Duggan, the mayor of Detroit, they're doing good work here, you know. But the fact of the matter is they really aren't, you know, in most instances. Detroit's been Democrat controlled for decades now. And that's why we have the highest crime rates we've had. It's just, you know, oh, let's defund DPD. Let's, you know, put the money in places it shouldn't go and focus on all the wrong issues that are just going to keep people in office. And, you know, and here's the thing, like, that this is one of the reasons why I actually, you know, I work from home and I lobby to continue to work from home because, you know, my wife, she works in the city of Detroit for her job. And because of that, she has to give up an additional 2% to pay city tax. We don't live in Detroit, but because this was a change that was made that because you work in the city of Detroit, you should have to pay Detroit taxes on top of the city and state taxes we already pay, on top of your income taxes, on top of your federal taxes and everything else. So when it adds up, like, this becomes a huge, huge issue here. And to find out the level of fraud, right? And to think that this is limited to only Minnesota and only Ohio, let's just not be naive about this, right? It goes a lot further. And I'm sure, I hope this movement, this idea, this concept of uncovering this and then blasting it on the internet, I hope it doesn't lose momentum because people need to know. And you see this stuff posted, you know, everyone, ooh, down with ICE. ICE are the bad guys. This is terrible. We're kicking out these immigrants. These immigrants are, you know, to be deported, you have to be here illegally. That doesn't mean you're losing your visa. That doesn't mean you're having your green card revoked without due process. It means you never went through due process. You've been living in this country, leeching off the system, sending our dollars, physical cash, right, back home to a different country to help prop up that economy that is doing nothing for us. And it's wrong. Take care of number one. If you don't take care of yourself, nobody else is going to. What country or organization or entity around the globe is actively lobbying to help send money to the United States? Nobody. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's either the United Nations or NATO. Somebody filed some kind of a grievance or petition or something to sanction. I think some kind of a sanction against the U.S. It's like, we don't have friends globally. We're everyone's friend when they need something and nobody's friend in most other, you know, regards. It's the stupidest perpetuated lie that we have friends in other countries that are doing things for us on a trade level, any of these things. Everyone wants to look at Trump and go, oh, it's the tariffs. You just pissed everybody off. It's like, well, yeah, because we've been getting screwed from behind for decades with our trade partners. And at some point, you have to put your foot down and say enough is enough. And are you going to damage relationships? Are things going to get worse for a while? Yes. Yeah, they are. But you know what? They've been putting the screws to us for so fucking long. You have to. That's why I was in favor of the tariffs. I was. And we've seen prices on shit go up, right? We've seen optics companies in the 2A space, albeit the more budget-oriented ones that build shit overseas. And then even American-made companies that get some supplies and raw materials from overseas. We've seen prices go up. We've seen prices on almost everything go up. Let's be real. The cost of living in the United States has skyrocketed. And I honestly... Well, a lot of people want to blame the tariffs. I blame Joe Biden. I blame, you know, the stuff that came out of COVID and the ports being shut down and the trade backups and things like that, like, and supply chain issues. I blame a lot of that with Joe Biden and the Democrats and how they handled lockdowns and, you know, forced that shit upon the general populace of the United States. And it was better and worse in some states than others, whatever. But, like, we don't have to get into it, but that's just my personal feeling on it. And if you guys disagree, like... Awesome. You know, the issue still remains. It does nothing to sit here and argue about whose fault it is. We just need to find a resolution. So probably a lot more coming on this, you guys. Like, I wouldn't say watch the legacy media for this issue with the daycares and the fraud, because they've been mostly silent about this. This has been one of those things that's been thrown around the internet. Legacy media outside Fox News hasn't, and I think maybe News Nation, maybe Newsmax, you know, those other conservative news outlets, which... Not saying they're all better than the liberal ones, but, you know, it is what it is. But you see people, and I do want to point out, like, I see people sharing stuff like, oh, you know, when Nazis took over Germany, it wasn't it wasn't soldiers coming in to do this and that and the other thing. It was shopkeepers and garbage men that turned into these people. It was your neighbors doing this to you. And it's like, This idea that people just hate ICE because they're removing people, they're dragging people out of their homes. Yeah, they're here illegally, you guys. They should never have fucking been there in the first place. And if they want to come back, they can go through the legal port of entry like anyone else. I don't understand what's so fucking wrong about that. You know, my family is an immigrant family. They came here from Mexico legally 3 generations ago. I'm a third generation immigrant, okay? I'm very proud of that fact. My family has all worked very hard for everything they have, however much or little that is in different instances, okay? There's nothing wrong with saying that you have to immigrate the right way. I mean, that's when Trump won the election in 2016, everybody was hemming and hawing and screaming and bitching and moaning and fucking complaining. Oh, I'm going to Canada. I'm moving out of this country. I'm leaving. And you know who did? Celebrities. People with a ridiculous amount of fucking disposable income. They left. I know I had people that I had, you know, done band with and were friends with in my early 20s and shit who hate me because of my political opinions and stuff, and they treat me like shit. And, oh, I'm going to Canada. Fuck this. I'm going to Canada. Trump hates gay people. He's going to ruin our country. Whatever. I don't really care. Get the fuck out. Whatever. You know how many of them actually fucking left? I mean, like, I couldn't tell you not one person I knew that left and went to Canada or a European nation or anything like that. You know why? Because they have fucking immigration laws that they enforce. We don't want you in our country unless you bring something of value here. And unfortunately, a lot of these, like, screaming liberals, they don't bring anything of value. They really don't. So other countries look at it, like, just straight objectively looking at this individual and go, there's no benefit to letting you into our country, and you're not seeking asylum. There's no need for you to leave your country urgently. We're not letting you in. Look at fucking Poland right now. They actually enforce their borders, right? And they did that. They started really cracking down on that years ago when the Ukraine conflict started blowing up. They did not want their country flooded with refugees. They took a certain number, they did their part, and then everybody else, move on, go somewhere else, which I think is completely fair. And guess what? They don't have any of the issues that other European nations are having, you know, like Italy and France right now being overrun by Somalis and Muslims and people who are genuine assholes that are trying to ruin the country. So, but anyways, okay. So enough ranting and raving on that one. The last issue I wanted to touch on, this is, I don't want to say late breaking, but woke up this morning at the time of this recording anyways. I am recording this on Saturday, but the president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, has been captured. So details are sketchy to some degree at this time. It's, you know, almost lunchtime on, you know, January 3rd, Saturday, when I'm recording this. So he's the president of Venezuela, who we've obviously had issues with over the past several years. The Trump administration has been taking action to combat a lot of the shit going on with Venezuela, right? He was actually indicted by the U.S. in 2020. So this has been like an ongoing thing for 5+ years now with President Maduro of Venezuela due to his ties. He's accused, rather, of leading a narco-terror operation tied to a lot of cocaine and weapons trafficking. So it's just like, you know, the South American wars of the 90s, Noriega, well, that's not Noriega, that's a different time, but I'm saying that because I'm thinking of, like, you know, the Harrison Ford Clear and Present Danger movies and stuff where all of this narco stuff was going on down in South America, right? So history just continues to repeat itself. We go focus on the Middle East for 20-some fucking years, and then South America blows up, and then we go focus back on that, and I'm sure another 20 years or whatever, we'll be back to the Middle East for another fucking issue. But partnered with FARC, which I don't, that's a guerrilla movement in South America, I'm pretty sure. At any rate, but like his ties to that, that's why he's being indicted. I don't have specifics on it, on any of that, right? But it's a big deal because we sent Delta in to go capture this head of a foreign government. We don't typically do that very fucking often. We just don't. Like, when that happens, here's the thing, guys. There's only so many independent nations across the globe, right? So when one nation goes out and captures the head of another, that's a big fucking deal and something worth paying attention to, because typically, if there hasn't been military action to that point, there's fucking gonna be. Typically, right? But yeah, so Maduro and his wife captured by, you know, Operational Detachment Delta, Delta Force, the unit, CAG, you know, whatever you want to, or ACE, or whatever name they're going. I've heard they're trying to change the name again. I don't fucking know. But that's the thing. They were captured by Delta and transported to New York, is what I had seen. Is this going to become a bigger, broader issue? Probably. If I had to guess, this is going to cause some changes. It's going to create some stir and impact in South America. Venezuela is a pretty decent sized country in the continent. So, the hope is that and I don't trust this, because if you guys look back on history and the CIA's involvement with, you know, like basically everything in South America, it doesn't really go the way that we would hope it. We install a new government or help install a new government. And then in 20 years, just like with, you know, Afghanistan and stuff, we end up going to war with those people. So, you know, not optimal if I had to try and foretell the future of what's going to go on in South America. I really don't know what's going to happen with it. Hopefully that makes them a partner nation. And it's something we're able to build relationships, strong relationships, positive relationships with the governments in South America. I know that the counter drug activity is something that's a big focus for the Trump administration. Something that was kind of honestly, I think, in a lot of ways neglected during the war on terror. That's probably why it's so out of hand now. But this country, the United States, has a huge drug issue. And I'm not trying to sit here and rehash everything that Ronald Reagan did in the 80s and the war on drugs and all that stuff. And you can hear the liberals just screaming right now about how the war on drugs wasn't about drugs. But when you look at the amount of deaths every year in this country tied to drug overdoses, fentanyl specifically, and other things, it's a huge problem. And it's something that during the election that a lot of voters just wanted to see something done about, right? So it has to start somewhere. And I think these broader issues, these broader operations tied up through the cartels in Mexico and then the illegal drug trafficking into the United States through the southern border amongst, you know, the northern border, other places, ports of entry, what have you, that's a real problem. So you have to start somewhere. And you can't really deploy the U.S. military across the country due to, like, posse comitatus and the complications there, which is why ICE is a huge thing right now, and we're seeing other agencies being brought into the fold on some of these counter-narcotics operations and, you know, task forces and this and that and the other thing, right? I'm not super well-read on that, but I am aware that it's going on, and if you guys aren't, like, it is. It's totally a fucking thing. It's a huge focus right now. Does it tie back to a lot of these immigration issues? I think so, just because a lot of times it's illegal immigrants that are running and staffing these operations. So, you know, it is interconnected. I will be interested to see how this one shakes out. What happens if he stands trial in a court? Where does he? You know, are we the only country that wants Maduro, right? So is he going to go face trial at The Hague, right? Or is he going to become a prisoner in Guantanamo, or is he going to be in a U.S. prison here? I'm going to be interested to see how this goes, because he's a fucking president of a foreign nation, you guys. This isn't just like some guy we picked up off the street or a drug kingpin in Chicago or something. This is a president. So, yeah. But at any rate, you guys, thank you so much. We're like rolling up to 50 minutes here, and this I try not to go over an hour with these, although it can be easy depending on the subject that we're getting into. So I hope this was informative. If you guys weren't aware of this stuff going on, I would urge you to look into any of it, really, as all these issues are really impactful and pertinent to us here in the United States, and those of us that are prepared civilians, prepared citizens here in the United States, but also globally, right? Like, as I said in the beginning, we have listeners across the globe, and it makes me really happy to see that stuff. So again, if you guys have thoughts, if you have comments, please leave it in the comment section below. I'd love to see more activity there in 2026. It'd be a huge goal. Like, I love when I get the notification that I have comments on actual episodes here through Spotify or through whatever platform. And additionally, if you guys, if you aren't subscribed, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. You know, leave me a 5-star rating on whatever platform you're listening on if you enjoyed this, because that stuff, it really helps, you know, through some metrics and third-party reviewers and listen notes and stuff like that. So, but that's all I got for you guys. This is officially the first sit rep of 2026 is in the books. Looking forward to the next 11, potentially more, throughout the rest of the calendar year. Hope everybody had a great New Year's Eve celebration, and we will catch you guys on the next iteration of the Sunday Sit Rep. Like I always say here, you guys work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.